There are over 10 million people in some form of government incarceration around the world today. There are 2.3 million in the USA alone, and any way you slice it, that is a huge population of people. The population of people living in prisons is larger than the population of people living in most countries on Earth. Now, the arguments for and against prisons and criminal punishment and the power of the state are endless, and we will be trying to avoid this entirely for this video for two reasons. One, there are people far more qualified to speak on these issues. Yes, there are lots of people in prison that probably shouldn't be there and a lot of people that aren't there that really need to be. Yes, the conditions in many of these institutions around the world are abhorrent, and yes, there are probably crimes that land people in prison that really shouldn't. But go and learn about that from someone who can speak on these issues with authority. The second reason we are avoiding this side of the issue is that it would detract from what we are really here to explore, which is the economics of this whole system. Locking people up is a big business, and whatever way you slice it, 10 million people is a potentially huge workforce. All of this can add up to have some very significant contributions towards national economies in more ways than you might expect. But, as always, we need to look at a few key areas to truly understand the economics of incarceration. So, what's the opportunity cost of having people locked up? What impacts does this all have on the wider economy? And finally, what impacts does the economy have on incarceration? Now, while this all sounds like a pretty grim topic that, let's be honest, most of you economics nerds watching are never going to have to experience directly, it's still really important to understand. This is because, even despite the social impacts that putting people in prison can have, there are some very serious positive and negative externalities caused by this system. In a heartless, clinical sort of way, the study of economics could shed some light into the system by addressing the opportunity cost of the bars. What does the New York Hilton, the Marriott Maui Ocean Club, and the Grand Hyatt of Paris all have in common? A night in any one of these hotels would cost less than a night in the average state penitentiary. Let that sink in. Average penitentiary. Not supermax, not intensive treatment facilities, just the average run-of-the-mill prison. What's more is that according to publicly available state budget records, these figures get a lot worse in certain areas. In New York, for example, the average prisoner is running the taxpayer just under $2,500 a night. That is $892,206 per year, which is about the average total state tax revenue from 110 citizens. And they wonder why their taxes are so high in New York. All of this ignores federal penitentiaries, which in fairness are cheaper, only averaging around $300 per night, but still add to the collective bill. So, prisons are expensive. This probably isn't a huge surprise to a lot of people, but just how expensive may be to some, especially when this becomes a question of opportunity cost. It costs the average New York taxpayer $2,000 per year to maintain the state's prison system. Of course, more of this is paid by higher income earners with higher marginal tax rates, but on average, that's the figure. Now, I am sure that the average person watching would be more than happy to give up $2,000 of their hard-earned dollars to keep people who are truly a danger to the community behind bars. Nobody is advocating for free-range serial killers because they are more cost-effective, but for non-violent offenders, this trade-off might be a little bit more difficult. Personal opinions about being tough or easy on crime, sometimes the dollars and cents are the easiest, most rational way to think about it. But, of course, there is more to this. Even non-violent crimes can have negative externalities, community deterioration, property damage, knock-on implications that may push people to violence, and genuine suffering from things like substance abuse. Does the cost-benefit analysis still work then? Well, maybe. The total cost of crime in the USA was estimated by the Government Accountability Office to be around $690 billion in 2017, of which about $190 billion was the cost of maintaining those prisons. But there are some ancillary costs that people might not consider. The report broke these costs down into three sections: costs in anticipation of crime, costs as a consequence of crime, and costs in response to a crime. Costs in anticipation to a crime are important to consider because they are often overlooked. Things like insurance premiums, home security systems, prevention programs, and policing are all the costs that a society incurs because crime may exist. If crime was to go away, these costs would be eliminated. Now, of course, locking people up doesn't necessarily get rid of crime, but most studies suggest it does, of course, reduce it, which should be relatively obvious. It's also easy to see that spending on these anticipation factors is relatively in line with crime rates. Much more money is spent on security by the average resident of Johannesburg than the average resident of Oslo. The second factor is the cost as a direct consequence of crime, as in, once a crime is committed, this is the bill of damages. This can range from relatively mundane things like costs of damages for graffiti or a broken window, all the way up to things that are a bit more difficult to put a price tag on, like the cost of a human life, which is probably the big one here. This category also incorporates things like lost wages for unpaid workdays by the victims who might be recovering, as well as the cost borne to an employer who will miss out on having a productive worker working. Now, the final factor of criminal costs borne by society are the costs in response to crime. These are the costs of providing public defendants, running a court system, paying for investigators to track down offenders, and of course, the cost to imprison them, should that be deemed necessary. Now, if we understand this breakdown of costs, perhaps the solution can be just as simple. Work out how much of these expenses would be alleviated by imprisonment, and then administer accordingly to balance the costs with the costs. A non-violent offender who didn't do any property damage, well, they don't really contribute to any of these expenses very heavily in the first two categories, so not too much should be spent on them in the response category. On the other hand, someone who has the capacity to do massive property damage or inflict suffering on a victim, well, yeah, maybe the cost-benefit analysis says that it's worth the money to have these people separated from any potential victims in society. Either way, that same society will foot the bill for a crime. It's an inevitability. But, all other things being equal, and assuming no changes are made to the system that is currently in place, this approach does show a lot of promise. We use a capitalist system of cost-benefit trade-offs to determine who gets what in most nations around the world, so why not use the same system to determine who gets what? Now, of course, all of this is ignoring one other externality that comes from a massive prison population: the impact that it has on the labour force. Most prisoners, especially those in the United States, work. They work all kinds of jobs, from basic manufacturing all the way up to fighting fires. More or less, if there is a terrible job that has to be done, it's probably been done by inmates somewhere. Now, in fairness, there are some major advantages to this. For starters, it provides vocational training to some of these inmates. This is training and skills that these people can use to find a job once their sentence is over. And what's more, is that sometimes the companies involved even have programs in place that offer similar roles to inmate workers on the outside once they are released. Stable employment is hugely important to everybody, but especially for those who have just been released from prison, because a stable income will help to dissuade them from needing to resort to criminal activities all over again. These kinds of working arrangements also seem fair to the outside observer. A criminal sitting around all day doing nothing, however terrible the conditions are, just doesn't sit right with people who need to work for a living to put food on the table. More pragmatically, the profits from prison labour also help to offset the costs of these facilities, but there are two problems with this. The first are that these profits primarily go towards private institutions. Major private prison companies like CoreCivic, GEO, and Serco soak up a majority of this labour revenue. Now, this wouldn't necessarily be a major issue. Public services are privatised all the time to varying degrees of success, and if this work helps to offset the invoice, so be it, right? Well, unfortunately, it doesn't, and the cost per inmate has actually risen by over 40% in the last 5 years, despite more and more work being done inside these institutions. But even all of this ignores a much larger problem. This is work that could be done by a regular employee. There are hundreds of thousands of jobs being worked by prisoners, not just in the US, but in almost every country around the world today. In almost every instance, these prisoners are paid a fraction of what a regular worker would receive. This means that private corporations are able to access a pool of cheap labour with workers that are routinely paid less than a dollar an hour, which will displace regular workers in these lower skilled professions. We have studied the impacts of outsourcing many, many times on this channel before, but even nations with the lowest cost of living cannot compete on price with workers in prisons, especially when it's factored in that shipping is not a major expense when it's made right there at home. In a cruel twist of irony, one of the biggest tasks performed by prison labour is sewing Made in America tags onto items of clothing. But all of that aside, the net cost borne to the average worker of having to compete with prison labour does not at all help to offset the equation we were looking at earlier, but it actually pushes it even further into the red. And perhaps in many ways, this could be by design. There is a book on this issue aptly named The Rich Get Richer and the Poor Get Prison. This book was written by two criminal justice professors, Jeffrey Riemann and Paul Layton, and they explored the positive feedback loop of incarceration causing poverty in communities that led to incarceration. In a dizzying amount of cases, this book found that workers were sent to prison because they were unable to leave work to appear in court out of fear of losing a job that was going to be hard to replace thanks to the role being shipped off to prison workers. Of course, we promised we wouldn't stray too far into the moral argument, but this is definitely worth a read to hear from people that can speak about this issue. The prison system, criminal justice, and the law in general are all topics that are, by their very nature, divisive. Prisons and incarceration are something that most people don't ever get too much exposure to, thankfully, and so it's easy to forget about something that goes on that doesn't really affect them. But of course, it does. It impacts our employment, our communities, and perhaps most importantly, our wallets. As with all issues that have this much at stake, it's easy to get emotional and make decisions based on feelings, but perhaps the best way to address the cost of crime is to treat it like a transaction. In a perfect world, it wouldn't be there, but while it is, we should just work to reduce the costs.